Right, here we are. Welcome back, folks. We're talking with Dennis Weiss about the documentary Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. And we are trying to look at this difficult and emotional, very contrived and much lied about man, and also, of course, consequent history, especially surrounding World War II and the stories that we've been told, and how we basically can try to achieve some kind of truth about the matter. And I think one of the reasons for this too, Dennis, why it's important, is, in my views, there's so much that hinges on this. A lot of the things that we are, you know, told about this is a consequence of how we are told that we either have to live today, or you know, the political situation or whatever. There's so many things that are verboten, forbidden, because of the alleged crime of the Nazis and their alleged ideology and their murderous machine and everything else that we've heard about build up. So I feel it's an important issue to try to tackle that, to come to a position of fairness and of truth, so that we today can kind of be in a situation where we can be objective and live life in such a way where we're not controlled with you know, about the lies of the past. Would you agree with that?
Totally. But unfortunately, we are.
Yeah, we are. It's a very difficult situation, you know. And why don't we talk a little bit about what happened here as well during the war? Because obviously, to me, it seems like that at a certain point, it kind of just spirals out of control. Let's begin with Britain. Did Hitler ever want to have a war with Britain?
No, everything that Hitler did or said leads to the fact that he never wanted a war either with Britain or with France. Because you've got to remember that time, them two are the world powers. Them two are the together ruled three quarters of the world, if not more.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. So is this, what was the reasoning for, because obviously we know that we've seen the maps, Germany occupied a lot of these territory, never Britain, of course, but they send the rockets on them and everything else, but they went into France and everything, and they kept on expanding. What was the tactical reasoning behind this?
Well, the problem Hitler had was after the Poland escapade, there was a bit of a lull, and then suddenly the British troops were starting to pour into Europe. So obviously France has declared war. Britain is coming in big numbers. Put yourself in Hitler's position. What do? Do you stand and fight in Germany, or do you go out and attack the aggressor? Which is everything that the German army was, the strength was the Blitzkrieg. So consequently, it took out a number of countries doing it. Belgium was one of them. But people don't realise Belgium was all part of the France in the First World War when they occupied parts of the Rhineland in Germany. So I don't think Hitler had any problems we going through Belgium. And there were certain parts of Europe which he needed to secure sources of, you know, iron ore, etc., which Britain were heading towards in Norway, and he had to fight his way up there, which he managed to take. But also he took the fight to the enemy. Now, this wasn't the war of the First World War where they were stuck in trenches for years on end. This was a fast-moving army with tactics which absolutely bamboozled the French and bamboozled the British to a point where the French were overrun and the British were left at Dunkirk with nowhere to go, backs to the wall. Everybody says that Hitler made a mistake, and in hindsight, he probably did make a mistake. But everything that I researched tells me that he didn't want a war with Britain, and he thought if he didn't annihilate the people on them beaches, then Britain would be more sympathetic to not carrying on the war. So he allowed, in my opinion, and all the facts in the documentary state, he allowed the British to escape. Even over a period of time, there were something like 22 peace offers to stop this carnage, or stop this war going on, which everyone was turned down by Britain.
Really?
In fact,
repeat that. So there were a situation where they were kind of forced to expand, you know, the war to be able to tackle the pressure against Germany. But then at a certain point, there was offering. It's like, okay, let's stop this. Let's not fight anymore. I don't want to fight with you. There were offers made to Britain. How many? And they did deny that.
Yeah, well, the secret documents in the documentary, and it says 22 government paper, 22 at least offers of peace. before 1941.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the time, you see, what people don't realize is that people think that World War II was a war either, if you live in the UK, it was England against Germany, or if you live in America, it was America against Germany. Because I remember watching one of the Spielberg series about the, I can't remember the battle now, but anyway, and no Russians were ever mentioned. And no British were ever mentioned. It was just Americans.
Wow.
So you get the feel that it was just America against Germany if you lived in America. The truth of the matter was it was a European civil war against the Bolshevism of Soviet Union and National Socialism, or Christianity, if you like,
yeah,
of Europe. It was a religious holy war. All Hitler's allies from Croatia to Romania, Bulgaria, Orthodox Christian, whatever, they were God-fearing countries who were afraid of this Bolshevist atheistic regime. So, and that's what the world and many Christians in this world still don't realize today, that all these, when you see someone like Saving Private Ryan, and you're seeing all these soldiers, many of German descent anyway, are falling on the beaches, are actually falling because they're going to help Stalin. And I don't think they realize that situation.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on it. A religious holy war. It's an extension, really, of the internal turmoil that we've seen in Europe for so many hundreds of years, really, where we have religious infighting, and then of course we have what's interesting here as well, I think, is that we've had Germany has been the center of a lot of ingenuity, a lot of philosophy of an engine, the heart of Europe, really. And I think there's been a concerted effort to shut that down, to end that that engine of sure. There's been some problems there and issues, but I mean, my God, look at the inventions, look at where we are today in the world, even despite everything that's happened, of all the progress that has occurred because of the ingenuity that came out of Germany, and as we know now, Dennis, a lot of this knowledge, of course, was exported to other parts of the world later. Full-on scientists, we wouldn't even have the space program or GPSs if it wasn't for the developments that occurred within Germany,
Yeah, unreal. I mean, there was a race of all the Allies to try and get to the point where they could get as many scientists or as many of these patents that they could. But the point being is that at the end of the day, people will probably be shocked to realize it was a holy war. And the documentary explains that totally. And at the end of the day, the three countries of Britain, the US, and France are not Christian countries. They've never been Christian countries. They're Masonic. They're Masonic countries. Roosevelt was a Mason.
Yep.
Truman was a Mason. Churchill was a Mason. And Stalin was a Mason. And contrary to what anybody will say, Hitler destroyed Freemasonry across Europe. Destroyed the France, destroyed it in the Channel Islands. And he also opened up the churches when they went into the Ukraine. The German soldiers were blessed. It shows this in the documentary. They were blessed going through the Ukraine because they opened up all the churches and for the Orthodox Christians. So there's a lot of myths around it all. But the problem was the people in Germany and the people fighting for Germany knew this. And that's why there was never any surrender. And that's why there were never any capitulation of the German government, even at the worst hour, because they knew exactly what they were fighting, and to surrender it wasn't an option.
Yeah, I wonder what they were told and what the people at the time realized that this was about, as compared to the complete fabricated hindsight created story that we get today. And I wonder if there's got to be knowledge and communication about this at the time, correct?
Well, at the time, I think America was suppressing the news out of the Ukraine, because for large parts of the mid-30s, Ukraine was suffering, and over 6 million died from starvation under Stalin's regime. So that was suppressed because obviously Roosevelt had a liking for Stalin, called him Uncle Joe, and biggest mass murderer of all time, without a doubt.
Yeah, and that's also why so many other countries, nations, and people within these countries, they they aligned themselves with Nazi Germany. They ended up helping and fighting for them because they realized that the threat and the danger was, I mean, again, I don't think they thought like this at the time, but again, the story that we're getting today with hindsight, they realized that the threat from communism was immensely more dangerous. They've lived through it, that the situations were so bad at such a peril that they clung on to anything they could in order to save them and get this out of the situation.
Well, in the documentary, at one point, it shows some German veterans talking, and they're adamant that Stalin would have gone right to the shores of the Channel, and that's he had every intention of doing that because America didn't have enough troops there to stop him anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only because the atomic bomb went off that Stalin had to think twice.
Right. Yeah, I see. So this scenario, it spirals out of control. It feels like to me when I watch the documentary and take into account what I've learned previously and all the other war historical documents documentaries and material I've read about it and whatnot, it becomes such a situation of carnage and it spirals out of control because there's a realization I think at some point here where just like we have to do everything we can, and both sides, all the sides thinks like this of course, but we have to do everything we can now to stop it in its tracks, and this makes it just kind of continue and continue and continue, and war, Germany end up fighting not only a two-front war, it's a 3-4-5-front war in some cases, right?
Yeah, well, as far as my research took me, Hitler, I think, knew that he has to defeat the Soviet Union by 1942, because by that time he knew the Americans would be in the war, he knew the British would be rearmed, and he failed for various reasons. The problem was, He knew that it was a war of ideology, and it was annihilation. Now, this is when the tactics of the Allies even changed. Now, for the first time, America bombing civilians. British had been doing it first, Churchill and the RAF commander, I forgot his name now, like, they both agreed that, to bomb the civilians while the Americans were only bombing the factories, but they changed their course as well. So they started bombing civilians. They had the Russians coming in, raping en masse from the east, and it was a situation where, like I said a little bit earlier, people said, "Well, why didn't they surrender? What's the point in surrendering? They did the same what had just happened. There was just a mad free for all to get to the center of Berlin."
Yeah, exactly. Now it's horrendous to think about the carnage of all the people, murdered during something like this, who were killed and whatnot. But what I find interesting here as well, as you detailed in the documentary, it's the all of this has been blamed on Germany alone. They were the aggressor. They were the one who's doing every evil conceivable act in the world. They were breaking the war crimes and what did all of it. But the other side has been completely vindicated. There's no recognition whatsoever that they did anything wrong, despite everything we know today with Dresden, and you mentioned before the other place there. What was that called again? The Blueberg massacre
in Austria.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the Nuremberg trial is a way of putting people on trial, making them look criminals, and even using hanging as a weapon to kill them at the end to make them even look more like criminals. But the actual truth of the matter was, the Nuremberg trials was judged by perpetrators of war crimes themselves. And there's no denying that.
Do you think that this is a difficult psychological and emotional hurdle for people to get over? Because basically, at every instance where we're talking about here, we come up against the prospect that, nope, that was a lie. Nope, they lied about that. This is all false. This didn't really occur, or it did occur, but the reasoning for it was this. Even putting rationale and war tactic behind something to try to make sense of it, is that something that you think people instinctively are working against? Because with everything they've been told for their entire lives and for so many years and with so many movies, as I mentioned in the opening here, they just cannot get their head through that. They just cannot realize it. Has it been difficult, do you think, for people to face this?
Well, I suppose. It varies in the person. I was talking to an American soldier who's in the documentary, and he messaged me to say that when he first started watching it. He went into all the research himself to make sure everything what was being said was true, and he just couldn't believe it. He said at the end of the day, it changed, completely changed his life. And he's not the only person who said that, because that we encourage people to research the documentary. Truth fears no investigation.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Let's continue here in the chronology of what occurs and what happens here. There's tremendous amounts that's happening at the same time here, and it's very difficult to make sense of everything. I mean, think about it, Dennis. So even today, just not talking about the lies themselves, the fabrications, but even like unraveling what happened in certain, you know, theaters and scenarios and certain campaigns and everything. Even to this day, we haven't a full, I feel, in a way, complete picture of all the intricacies of all the different fronts and what actually happened and everything else. There's a lot of, this is just an extraordinary time, really, when you think about it as well. I mean, even down in, you know, Africa with Rommel and the tanks and everything, that's a whole story in itself. It's fascinating, you know?
Well, what's really most people be surprised about is the fact, say, for instance, when he was calling Hitler a racist, and as the documentary goes on to explain, there's nobody more racist than America. I mean, I honestly believe that Adolf Hitler would never have joined the Ku Klux Klan. It was a totally different thing. He got the wrong message altogether. The fact is that when Hitler was being accused of doing such a thing to the Jews, and at that particular time he was sending them to Palestine with all their belongings, people in America there were colored people getting hung,
yeah,
and burned tied to trees. But all this is for some reason people just forget about all this, and they just focused on Germany and Hitler all this time. It surprises a lot of people, because even the Germans fought shoulder to shoulder. And many Muslims, many Arabs, many colored people fought for the German army. People might not believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, they fought shoulder to shoulder. But the Americans never fought shoulder to shoulder with the black American soldier. They were all segregated. Hmm. Tell me who's the more racist.
If we approach this from the point of view, as you said before, that it's a religious, it's a holy war, it's against political ideologies, not a racialist Aryan German nation that is against every other race or people. Then it turns out differently if we look at the some of the things that you just mentioned, in the fact that there was actually a multicultural fighting force within the German army. That's very interesting, you know.
Without a doubt, probably the most diverse fighting force the world's known.
So what is all the, look at that for a moment then, the eugenics, Germany was racist, it was about, blonde, blue-eyed people, and then just basically, I mean, this is what some people believe, blonde, blue-eyed people, that was the one who's going to rule the world, and then everyone else is subhuman and inferior, and it was just a matter of time, really, before Germany would have killed all these people, right?
This is the big myth, obviously, yeah. We're point being, German racism was the advocation of building up your own race, and as Germany did do, from the depths of despair, they built themselves up to be a great culture, great nation in under 12 years, and six of those were at war. So what they're saying to other countries is, you should be like this. You know, they would say to the Arab countries or the Africans, like to build yourself up and best yourselves. That's German racism.
Right. Now, eugenics and, everything else, there is a, there was an ideology of betterment within the race, right? It's a nationalistic ideology that were for the betterment of their own people. What I find interesting is that this then have, with everything that we've been told, this has kind of gone into, as it always does, extremists, kind of a pendulum effect. The world swings in the complete opposite direction. And now today we have a kind of a guilt by association issue, really, whether, and it doesn't matter if it's true or not, it's just how it is. They see wherever the Nazis did X, anybody can never do or say anything that has to do with X again, because that's going to be associated with the most wicked of evilness, right?
Yeah, that's quite true. Because with eugenics at the time, America, certainly in comparison to Texas, they were advocating eugenics, but as soon as it was associated with the Nazis after World War II, everything stopped.
Well, all of them did at the time. That's what's so interesting here. Britain was certainly prominent. Sweden was doing it and everything else, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, if a person is vegetated to a state where the life is just a living vegetable, you know, should there be a right for that person to carry on living? I don't know.
Eugenics is about the betterment, obviously, of there, that there is a concerted effort and a concern in terms of the procreation. Is there anything that indicates within, I've heard other stories here that basically there were these mothers who volunteered, or even maybe they were even forced to basically line up and have sex with all these SS men and everything else to create some kind of, you know, super army and everything else. Is that true?
Well, whether it's true or not, I mean, I haven't really researched deep enough into that to comment. But as far as I'm aware, I think Hitler did want a line of the German race to be purely German, and probably the SS soldiers were the pick of the bunch, and they had a wife who was Aryan, you know, without a doubt. But that, I don't think that was a mass overall German thing. I think he just wanted a pure German streak in his country. Which, you know, multiculturalism is destroying today anyway.
Well, it certainly is, and it's creating today. Again, we have, because of that, you know, reactionary sentiment of the pendulum, we have actually the resulted in dysgenics now, and we actually have, if there is any kind of betterment, an achievement of reaching, you know, further and beyond, or even if you want to marry within your own race, that's racist now, you know.
Well, is it wrong for Hitler to want a certain amount of people in his own country to be absolutely German? Is that wrong? That's the question you've got to ask yourself.
I don't think so.
It's the same in England. It's the same in Italy. If there's a certain amount of people in that are pure Italian, is that wrong?
Yeah, and is there any evidence that points to the fact that this was forced on people, or was this voluntary?
Well, the problem is a lot of the things what happened after the war were twisted and denazified. So it's difficult, you know, to be honest, without the research, I can't really comment. But as far as I'm aware, I wouldn't have thought there was any forcing needed. I think there would have been enough volunteers as it was. That's my gut instinct.
If it was a true nationalistic sentiment, and if it was a spirit of the people, a kind of a folk identity, then and if there was a realization that this was actually based on, you know, heritage and culture, I would presume that this would be very much encouraged and voluntary, and it wouldn't have to be something that was enforced on people.
My feelings, exactly.
And I think, again, that we have, again, to make sense of this for people today, to with their current morals and their current kind of imposed type of worldview that we have today, then, again, it's almost like, it had to be forced, because how could anybody possibly have even thought like that, right? You know, we're so far removed from that type of thinking today, because I would argue that the whole world, in effect, have been, just as Germany was after the World War, have been denazified, right? So anything that approaches, as I said, guilt by association, if it approaches X, it's out of the picture, right?
Well, the documentary says at one point they weren't even allowed to speak his name after the World War.
Yeah, we have the same with you know, the runes, for example, which is interesting. I've literally heard from people who say that, you know, I shouldn't be into Norse mythology because the Nazis were into that kind of stuff, you know? So that's now racist, you know?
Exactly. But these laws are written by people who have a different agenda, I feel, to nationalism or for heritage. You know, what I feel is going on in Europe at the moment, maybe in America as well, is the breakup of heritage and the family and traditions.
Yes, I agree. And again, I feel that a lot of these arguments that we get repeated by all the time, I mean, you can look at a documentary that is not about this topic, actually, and about a very, very different topics. And the barrage and the misinformation is continually brought up about this type of issue that, oh, no, you know, I saw a Norwegian documentary example for, you know, that was questioning basically, does race exist, right? That's how far down the line we are now. But they questioned, you know, does it really exist? And it was like a kind of a preface that had to be stated there, because I believe that the program hosts were actually interested in this topic and felt some kind of sentiment of being for the idea that yes, there actually does there are race differences and whatnot, but they had to preface it. That's my point. They had to preface it in this. Oh my God, this is the Nazis murdered millions of people with this ideology. So we can't really talk about it anymore. We can't really acknowledge that it's a reality. You know.
Yeah, well, I read somewhere that Sweden was after abolishing the word race altogether.
That's correct. Exactly. There's going to be proposed in the in all legislation now. They're going to dump that word. You know.
Which means that technically there'll be no race mixing.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't exist, and it won't be in a white privilege either. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But again, even the documentary shows the policies after the war closer to today, where Sarkozy actually threatens to bring out a law to make race mixing happen more if it's not improved, or the numbers aren't improved. It's just going off the beaten track a little bit, but it does say in the documentary, if people are interested later on, about the policy of the race mixing in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. I think Sarkozy in France mentioned this too before he was before the other lefty socialists took over there. But he mentioned that the greatest challenge of the 21st century was to impose race mixing on people. And he was, I guess, specifically talking about the French people, but the European Union specifically. I don't know if this is imposed due to someone like Kudenhof Kalergi, the founder of the Pan-European movement, who also argued that this was the future path of the European to become a Negroid mongrel race, basically. And that's what he said, you know?
Well, this is you know, it's not without credence. You know, there's enough evidence that tells me that it is an agenda.
I believe you're right. And I think that, again, Sarkozy actually mentioned there will be sanctions imposed on people who refuse to go along with this agenda. So what do you think is the bigger plot? Why is this, first of all, if race doesn't exist, then why does it matter? And second of all, why is this so important to them if this part of a tactic, Dennis?
Well, okay, if you want my opinion and from what my research has brought me to, certainly I feel that the New World Order today has an agenda. I think it has a political agenda of communism. I think it has a religion agenda of Luciferianism. People may wonder and think I'm crazy, but when you look into it and you look into the Lucis Trust and how close they're tied to the United Nations and the teachings they follow of Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey, and then you look at the Olympic Games in London when you've got the rise of the Phoenix, which is in the occult world is the rise of Lucifer going around right under the very nose of 100,000 sporting fans in millions around the world. You also have a Eurovision Song Contest when you have a lady with a beard singing about the rise of the Phoenix. And all this is an agenda, I feel, to the New World Order of one government, one religion, and one currency yet to be decided. And so the easiest way to do that is the trace of communism is to break up the family, is to bring decadence, is to break the belief in God, is to corrupt the young. And everything we're seeing is happening before our eyes. All the subtle law changes in America with Obama, et cetera, and George Bush dismantling the amendments over there tells me I'm not wrong.
Do you believe that it was this future that Hitler and Nazi Germany was fighting against?
Well, like I said early on, it was a war of ideology. I have no doubt whatsoever if Nazi Germany had won that war, they would have wiped out communism completely. They would have wiped it out because they were the sworn enemy of communism. Likewise, as soon as the war was over, the purges on National Socialists started. The Nuremberg trials, the hangings, the denouncing as criminals, the first time ever in history that leaders of a campaign defeated were charged as war criminals. You have the Roman Catholic Church, who, without a doubt, the National Socialist Germany, with a half population of a Catholic, half population of Protestants, protected the Catholic Church. Once Nazi Germany had fallen, they helped the Nazis leave Europe and leave this purge. And then eventually, I believe they succumbed to communist infiltration which was going to be quite obvious. And at the end of the day, what few people do know or do not know is that they gave Hitler a requiem mass on hearing of his death. So these people who say that he was into the cult and all this kind of carry on, everything, when I go back right to the start of this this interview, all the actions to me speak louder than any words. So when he's in the requiem mass and they're helping the Nazis out of Europe, communism today, I feel, is in the Catholic Church. You've got a lot of paedophiles. You've got a pope now who's taken over from another pope what should have been a lifetime job. He resigns. A younger pope comes in and he's talking now on the same lines of the New World Order.
World banks and everything else he's suggesting, right? So
thing tells me I'm wrong. I wish I was wrong.
Yeah.
And that's all from the defeat of World War II, which is pretty much on part 25, where everything comes to, once you watch that and you see exactly the speeches that Hitler was making at that time, that it wasn't just a war against Germany, this was a war for mankind. He was right.
Now, there's many more components and questions here, people, that we'll get to, so bear with us here. There's many more aspects you might be, you know, jumping up and down because, oh, why don't you ask this or that? Or, you know, there's tons of things. We'll try to get to them as much as we can here today. But after the war, another thing, actually, let's begin on the occult aspect because we need to tackle that first. Because what you just mentioned is what people have heard. But the opposite, again, is the reversal of that, that they talked about the occult origins of the Third Reich. I've talked about that before. I actually enjoyed that documentary quite a bit when that came out, and you know, it went into, you know, Guido von Liszt and, you know, Stara magazine and the, you know, the background there. They talked about, just as you mentioned now, Blavatsky, the Theosophy connection, about the Aryans and all that stuff. What about all that, Dennis?
Well, exactly, the teachings of Blavatsky and Alice Bailey are exactly what this New World Order, or a potential New World Order, are following. So it's quite obvious at the time. Roosevelt, I mean, to me, the New World Order is the victors of World War II, which is the US, which is the UK, France. Soviet Union dropped out because of the communism fell in 91, and now Putin's gone on his own way. So there's them four, and in 1948 along came Israel. So now you've got them four now, the New World Order, in my eyes, which is the reason why Israel can bomb civilians for a month and nothing's ever said.
Right.
Or nothing's ever done to prevent it. But at the end of the day, all the teachings of Blavatsky is, I mean, if you go to the United Nations, you see the big mural of the Phoenix. As I just mentioned earlier, you know, the Phoenix rising at the Olympic Games. All these subtle little signs and things that the Illuminati as such like to show are all there. They're all there to see. And Hitler, coming from devout Catholic parents, was going to be an altar boy at one point. At the back end of the Catholic Church, as I said, received a requiem mass on his death. Took a half Christian, took a half Protestant, half Catholic army into the Soviet Union. Had Christian allies, Italy, Croatia, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, and the rest. There's nothing more blatant that this was Christianity was fighting a religious war against the Bolsheviks. And the Bolsheviks, again, my research just took me down that line, where they were into the sacrifices of Moloch and things like that. It's just nothing has deterred me yet to say I'm wrong. I wish I was, but I truly don't believe I am.
Now, was there not a recognition of, let's say, Norse connection and root of the Germanic people? There was certainly, to me, it seems there was a faction within the National Socialist Party that had definitely a more esoterically inclined ideology, shall we say. And I mean, I think that largely due to this, I want your answer on this, Dennis, but I believe that this is also largely due to the effect that you had a tremendous amount of people behind it. It's like saying that a whole country, I mean, as convoluted and diverse and crazy things are today, there's no way you could kind of coalesce the whole country and put it into an ideology. What it's rather points to me is that there was a, and I might be wrong then over here, but there was an inclusiveness of, let's say, the Norse material within that, and it wasn't like this is a Christian point of view only, and everything else is satanic. We don't like pagan stuff. There wasn't anything like that going on, correct?
Well, somebody says to me today, are the people in the UK are practicing the teachings of the Druids? There will be. You know, Britain is well known for the Stone Age and the occult side in Britain, without a doubt. Aleister Crowley and all them. So, but to say everybody in Britain is like that is exactly what they're saying about Germany. There would have been some fractions into that old traditional Norse kind of history or myths, just like we have over here, the Celts, etc. But it certainly wasn't the mass majority.
Right, yeah. Well, we've heard that this was kind of the driving ideology behind it. Do you believe that's true?
No, I don't believe that's true. I believe the driving ideology behind it was to keep Europe Christian and to rebuild after the war a larger success of Germany. As Germany had been taken from the doldrums of the early 30s to become this superpower in a matter of a few years, then Europe would have followed that suit. And I believe Europe would have been for Europeans, and Africans would have been for Africans. Don't get me wrong. I'm not convinced all race mixing would have been disallowed. I think, Hitler would have understood there's always going to be homosexuals. There's always going to be people falling in love from a different race, but would never have this intense, forced multiculturalism forced onto countries, which is actually breeding out the traditional race.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's a concerted effort of propaganda to make this popular, right? So that people do voluntarily do it. But just as Sarkozy said, to watch out for that, folks, that if you do not, at the end of the day, if his wishes come through and whoever he is taking orders from, that if it isn't voluntarily made, this is going to be, imposed upon people. And what's funny about that then we would basically be in the same situation, Dennis, but in the reverse of what people conceive and think that the Nazis was about. So it seems like they're actually okay with that type of behavior. I'm not talking about the truth now, but just the view, the image, the propaganda story that we get on it. They're actually okay with it just as long as it is in a certain direction and not the other, it seems like, correct?
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, one of the biggest myths that I wanted to tackle, and I did tackle in the documentary, was the Jesse Owens myth, whereas most people believe that Hitler snubbed him and treated the black Americans no better than what they thought the Jews would be treated, when really, when you get down to it, it was, in Owens' own words, he was snubbed by Roosevelt, not by Hitler.
Yeah, it was said he was a noble man, right? What was that he said?
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah. I mean, he didn't feel it right for the American press to actually gang up on what he called the man of the hour.
That's right, exactly, yeah. All right, again, as I said before, folks, there's so many components to this, and we apologize that we can't cover everything here today. We might be able to do a part two here of this later on at some point. But
this is why the documentary went to 6 months.
Well, exactly, because there's a lot in there, But let's talk about the Holocaust now. Let's talk about the machine of mass murder, as we hear that this was the very foundational roots of National Socialism, was to create a system that wanted to murder as many people as possible, specifically Jews. They wanted to eradicate the Jewish race, and they managed to do so by killing at least 6 million of them during the Second World War at the end of it. How do you begin to tackle this issue, Dennis?
Well, that is what the history books say, there's no doubt about it. And that is also what Hollywood says, and that is also what most of Europe forces you to say, and if you say any different, then you could face a prison sentence. Again, a law never been known before in history, the one event in history where you can face imprisonment for not acknowledging it. So, but at the end of the day, the camps after Germany fell and Americans went into all the camps, and the Russians had certainly come through the east into the camps. Once all the dust had settled, by the time the 1980s come around, we find out that there were no gas chambers in the Western camps, what were run by the Americans and were freely investigated later. the only camps left now are in the east, where the Russians have said that there was mass murder and gas chambers. But since then, there's been some certain investigations have gone over there covertly, undercover or whatever, and there's certain bits of evidence to find out that maybe that not isn't true as well. Now, I'm not saying that Jews didn't suffer under Germany. I'm not saying that Jews weren't killed. Certainly, it'd be naive to think atrocities didn't go on either side. But at the end of the day, one by one, the camps in the West were all acknowledged as never having gas chambers, even though prisoners and American soldiers at the time said there were.
What were the camps about?
Well, obviously, there were the movements of keeping of prisoners, obviously, under guard and moving them from the east to the west caused a big influx into, say, Bergen-Belsen, for instance, where it was built to hold 6,000, was holding 50,000 at the end of the war. What people don't realise is there's yet to be, out of 6 million supposed to be dead gas Jewish bodies, there's never yet been one found. All the piles of bodies in World War II is what we see is of typhus, people that either died from typhus or starvation, which again, there was various reasons for that as well. And this is from accounts from one of the British medical people who was first to arrive at Belsen. And he at first thought, for the first couple of weeks, he thought it was a Nazi atrocity until he found out that it actually wasn't as such. It was the British couldn't control it. There was a huge amount, 500 dying a week when the British came.
So, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, what I'm saying, like, is that all these things aren't taken into account. It's just the fact that we've been blanketly shown that by various means, Hollywood and the press and the media, etc., that there is without doubt been a Holocaust. Not only that, 70 years later, it's still being thrown around as well, which is unusual because you tend to think that more than just Jewish people died in World War II. Recently, I was in over in America, in Michigan, past the Holocaust Center, and I never saw one for any American soldiers,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, is surprising. It's just all about you know, the Jewish thing. But then again,
yeah,
you know, there's certain agendas, I think, for that reason as well. It has become a financial hot pot for him, if you like. You know, there's a lot of gain from it psychologically and financially.
Yeah, it seems like it's a very important issue to kind of reinforce and also to legitimize some of the behavior that we see today, for example, with Israel and whatnot. There's just so many components here, thoughts that come to me when we talk about this, Dennis, that I want to bring up, and I'll do the best I can to kind of try to ask you as much as possible so people can get an idea from you as well, what you believe happened and everything else. But basically what you're saying is that we had tremendous amounts of starvation and typhus epidemics that was due to the sanctions, largely that was imposed on Germany during the time, but also in the very fact that they were fighting so many different wars that there was basically not effort put upon taking care of the peoples in these camps. There were camps, right? Because there were everything, all the energy, all the food and everything else went to other places. So we had a mass casualty event that occurred due to this basically being what it was. It's a world war. It's just an amazing event of mass slaughter against the human family. And after this point, there are, if I'm presuming you correct, that there has been fabrications made in order to try to even more pin the blame on Germany. As far as I understand it, what I've heard as well is that there were actually a lot of items that we were told were the truth and reality-based events on facts that consequently had been revised and redacted, if you will. They had to revise it because we were told stories such as, for example, they made lampshades out of the skin of Jewish people. They made soap out of their fat and things like that. I think that this was pretty common knowledge at the time after the war that were going around, but then it turned out that the majority of these kinds of claims were actually, they had to take them back because it wasn't the truth, correct?
Yeah, even you know, from the Jewish side, they actually admitted that there never was any salt made from any Jews, and DNA, obviously, science moving on, proved that the lampshade was actually made from goat skin, and the two missing shrunken heads disappeared anyway, you know, before they could be tested. So a lot of it has been, as you like, debunked. And even the, I mean, the factual scientific facts to it all, to actually burn a body is not that simple, because the body is kind of 85-90% water. So to burn whole piles of bodies is sort of shown in, say, Schindler's List, which is actually based on a book which won a fiction award. To burn masses of body doesn't burn like paper. You know, it's difficult to burn huge amounts of bodies. And so there's a lot of things just don't add up. And people who want to investigate this type of thing and get to the bottom of it all are refused and blocked and threatened, and some are imprisoned.
Yeah, it of course, what it implies, which is a dangerous territory, is that we are talking about exaggeration, tremendous mythologization around the event to make it seem worse than it is. I would think that in such a tremendously serious situation as this is, Dennis, because we have so many people killed during the Second World War and after, the responsibility would be taken by all sides to try to get to the accuracy of the accounts here and actually trying to perceive it. But we have so many, there's so many eyewitnesses, right? There's so many people talking about this, so many survivors, right, that knew what was going on and what was happening. How can we, you know, how can we even question this, right?
Well, yeah, but as the documentary shows, that there are some Jewish survivors from the camps who talk about the camps as not the same place as what other Jews with either an agenda or a grudge have said. They're actually talking about football matches, which the SS used to join in on, and playing on the soccer teams. They're talking about a swimming pool at Auschwitz. They're talking about camp money. We can go to the canteen and buy cigarettes. They're talking about leisure such as watching movies, you know, in the camp theatre. Nothing compared to what you would describe a gulag. I'm quite sure, you know, there's no evidence of anything like, of such as a gulag, but in these camps, which the Germans have always professed to be work camps, had amenities there for workers not to be bored. I mean, to explain a swimming pool, to explain the camp money, to explain the canteens, to explain the theatres, to explain the plays, you know, which these Jews talking on the documentary openly admit to, it's hard to picture the other side of what other people are saying.
Yeah, it's a very strange scenario when you look at it in that way, and because you hear what we hear, you know, and is that these were camps that was designed in such a way that they wanted to kill as many people as possible, and what I've heard as well, I think, with some of this part you had in the documentary, and some, there's a lot of other documentaries out there, folks, if you're interested in looking at this and try to deconstruct it and again get the other side of what we've been told, for the sake of truth, for the sake of honesty, and for the sake of actually really finding out, is it true? As we know, the world is full of lies today. We were being told constantly all these lies about history and in the media. And I mean, if you're largely in agreeance with the direction of the world today and that largely things are good, maybe this is not for you. But if you have an inherent suspicion about, you know, our educational system and what we're told and how they're seeking to impose control over us, then I believe it's very important to look at this honestly and not be only swept away by our emotional stance on it. We have to, it's difficult to do, but I think we have to set this to the side. And again, this is for the sake of all the people that we hear have been lost during these horrendous events, you know, and everything. And just getting back on point there, Dennis, I think that the logistics alone of the claims is very difficult, which is another point where people have criticized the story that we're being told. The people were killed, they were dumped in massive holes, covered up, and then they were taken out, they were dug up again, they were burnt, and all their bones were smashed, and then they were scattered over certain areas and things like that. And this is if people think about the number and actually the logistics of it and how this was made, and even in the wet climate of Poland and everything else during these times, it becomes very difficult to understand how they managed to pull this off in all sincerity, actually.
Which is why an open debate would be good, but unfortunately it's never going to be forthcoming for the foreseeable future, you know. I mean, that would clear up a lot of things. You know, people have a go at revisionists and say that they're a lunatic fringe. Well, then fine, let's take a look at things. But it is the one law of the one event that you can't investigate.
Well, exactly, and that's, you know, what this is about too. I mean, I'm not decided on all the aspects of this. I don't know, but I'm looking into it. I'm curious. I want to find out. I've realized. See, one of the reasons is not only, of course, that it's like forbidden to just look into it or question it. That's a big red flag in itself, and should be to any person that you're not allowed, to look at it. But there's been, a lot of other things going on in this capacity as well. That there are. Again, so much that hinges on this particular event, and that's why I think we owe it to everybody to look at it with objective and honest eyes. Because if we don't, we're going to be very manipulated by that history, you know. So it's tremendously important, and I hope that people have the courage, and the skill, also the intelligence to look at it from that point of view and realize. And it's I know it's difficult for some. I know it's tremendously. Challenging because you come up against so much material. It's a psychological, impediment. It's so difficult to wrap your head around that, you know. But if we for a moment look at the gas chamber issue there, Dennis, in terms of what was discovered in hindsight, in terms of, I know that there's some people have taken tests and everything else, but there was a Cyclone B gas used and everything else in some of these rooms, and what was that about, and how do you think it was pieced together in hindsight? I want to get your take on that, how they went from the work camps and Cyclone B being used and to how they kind of pieced the story together afterwards to make it fit, if that's indeed what happened.
Well, the point of view of the Cyclone B is that even back in Napoleon days, typhoid is the war disease. At the end of the day, Cyclone B was brought out to disinfect the clothes, kill the lice, which is why you see all the hair being shaved off. And that was purely a medical thing to stop the lice from breeding. There's a little section in there where David Cole, a young Jew at the time, investigated Auschwitz and explained the mountains of shoes. Of course, there'd be mountains of shoes there. Of course, there'd be mountains of clothes there, because end of the day, they're all given uniforms anyway. So there's certain aspects which are used to incriminate, but yet are proven, you know, it would have happened anyway. I mean, you know, like I said, they were all given uniforms. So it's difficult, because I know a lot of people feel lost relatives, etc. But at the end of the day, I honestly feel that in an investigation, would clear everything up. I don't think we're going to get it. And at the end of the day, that is going to be the big decider, because most people say, well, Adolf Hitler, all right, if you haven't killed all them Jews. Point is, did he?
Well, it's, we're going to try to get David Cole on as well, actually, to talk about, his work, and he's recently written a new book that I believe partially goes into this topic. But he was an honest researcher. He had questions about it. He was Jewish himself. He went down there and looked at it from that perspective and tried to analyze it, and he found out some pretty interesting things. And he was, of course, his life was threatened after that, I believe, by the JDF or something like that, and he had to go underground and disappear for like 10 years or something like that, you know.
That's right. Well, again, he made a documentary and he filmed inside the gas chambers, and you know, the actual head of Auschwitz admitted that on camera that the Russians had come in after the war and on Stalin's direct orders and built the chimneys, holes in the roofs, etc. So there's a lot there which is, German engineering itself would tell you that's the worst blasting I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was holes in the wall. There wasn't any, you know, the windows were, it was all rackety. Basically, this is a very poisonous gas. I think that was the point, right? So this was done in these rooms as we saw them at the time, they would be, this is something that would kill even the people who dropped in the gas in the rooms, right?
Well, yeah, because the Americans at that time were the only ones who used gas as executions. And there, if you look at their execution chambers, they're airtight, sealed. Nothing like, you know, an air raid shelter. In a work camp in Poland with doors hanging off hinges and glass windows, etc. There's just a lot there to be desired.
Yeah.
Really. And people can watch the documentary and make their own take of it.
Well, exactly. That's all we encourage to do. As I said before, I'm not, I don't have any definitive, you know, position yet, really. I have questions. That's where I'm at, you know, and they used Cyclone, you know, B on the clothes because there was a lot, this is one way of you could, you know, kill the typhus. And that's one of the reasons why they shaved the heads, you know, on people. And so the oxymoronic kind of situation here, which is very difficult for people to believe, of course, but this is actually, this was actually done to save lives, Dennis.
Exactly. It's difficult because it'd be a shock to people who were hearing this for the first time.
Yeah.
But as I said, like, you know, it's all sourced in the documentary, and a lot of people have been overwhelmed by it.
Well, exactly. Don't we deserve the truth, folks? That's all we're talking about here. You know, we'll link that up, by the way, the video to folks that David Cole did on this program page. You can take a look at that for yourself and come to your own conclusions, you know, be honest, look into it, try to be objective, you know, and I've heard some people say as well, that wouldn't it actually be a positive sign that there actually wasn't that many people killed during Second World War, you know?
Well, it certainly would. But then again, that leaves another debate then to all the reparations that Germany's had to pay. So,
how much is that, by the way? I think you detailed that in the documentary. What are we talking money-wise here?
I did detail it. I can't remember the exact figures, but I know. I think they're still paying today, which is unbelievable. They paid off the reparations of World War One, and then they're well on the way of paying off the reparations of World War Two. But I can't remember the exact figures, to be honest. I've been guessing.
So, bottom line here is that there is a lot of people murdered during this world war. This is war, folks. A lot of people starved. A lot of people were mistreated. A lot of horrible things were happened. But the point is that there are always, as it always is, two sides to the story and to the coin. And there was a tremendous onslaught on the Germans after the world war, and even during, like, before it even ended, like with the Dresden and some of these massacres and the immense amount of rapes that occurred of the German women and all that. And I, shockingly, I've actually even heard from people who justify this kind of behavior, because what they believe that the Germans did on others, they believe that they deserved this because they imposed such evil in the world that it's somehow justified. Have you heard this as well?
Yeah, that's the angle a lot of them do come from. So what, they actually deserved it, but nothing comes further from the truth. The point is that they actually were given orders from the top to rape and kill as many Germans as possible. We even got a Soviet soldier in a documentary, like, gloating about it, saying it was nothing. So what? It was war. No, it was premeditated.
And we know before the war as well, Dennis, there was a lot of sentiments against Germany that they were seen as a problem, as a kind of a virus on the European continent, and in fact that there was a kind of a genocide ideology almost imposed on them, right? So I mean, it's like even from a point of view of preservation itself, that this was kind of brought upon. I know that this is a cycle of vengeance. I realize that, because today, of course, just to kind of bring balance to the picture here, but we get a lot of this kind of, you know, carte blanche kind of approaches to what, you know, group A or group B can do in the world because of what they believe they've been subjected to in the past. This is kind of a little bit on the running ideology of today, the reasons why Israel can bomb Gaza is because they were, you know, they were subjected to the Holocaust, and they can do whatever they want now, because they need to survive, and they have been targeted in the past. It's very dangerous for them, and therefore they can do whatever they want, right?
Yeah, that's the gist of it all. I mean, probably the most powerful country down there is Israel, with known to have atomic bombs, and yet feel the need to bomb incessantly for a month people without an air force, an army, or a navy. And like I said, nobody actually does anything to stop them or can do anything to stop them. These are the victors of World War II.
That's right. The victors write the history, folks. Has there been any document? I had asked Kyle Hunt this last time he was on, and make that a habit of people I've talked with about this to try to get to the truth of the matter. I've been looking around too, but has there been any document found that clearly states that there was a concerted effort to kill as many, you know, kill any Jews, or as many as possible, or you know, the final solution of trying to eradicate them, etc.? Is there anything like that out there?
No, there's been forgeries, but there hasn't been, out of all the millions and millions of documents what were taken away by the Allies, there's not one single piece of paper saying that this was actually an agenda of the Nazis. Of course, people turn around and say, like, oh, well, they wouldn't necessarily say it in public, but,
sure,
you know, that's, to me, that's it's a flimsy argument.
I think they were quite meticulous in terms of their documentation, I think. And certainly things can be destroyed or whatnot. I recognize that as well. Now, Hester, how was the forgeries deconstructed? How was that? How was this conclusion made?
Yeah, they probably come through scientific means. And couldn't tell you exactly, but I do know there has been forgeries, and they didn't stand up to it.
Now, there's a lot of things here, obviously, that we can continue and talk about and everything. And this is it's a huge, huge hurdle, you know, in terms of trying to tackle a lot of these issues and importance. But one of the points I feel you did in the documentary pretty well as well was to show, because we've always been told that this was a fierce hand that was basically imposed on everybody, and those who kind of went along with it, they were kind of mind controlled by propaganda and, you know, Goebbels and everything else, and they were, you know, sly mastery at public relations and everything else, and this is kind of how they pulled it off. But what you managed to do, I feel, in the documentary is that there was a real and true, I get the sense of it, there was a real and true positive sentiment and allegiance behind the political ideology, which was National Socialism, which of course goes against a lot of the things that we've heard, you know, that this was actually, a lot of people welcomed it when they did come into certain countries. As you said before, there were armies there, or people volunteering to go into the army with German and fight with them. And I think people have to question themselves, why does this even happen? Why did this occur if it was such a ferocious and vicious hand that was just about suppressing everybody, you know?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it stems from the fact that the National Socialists, especially Hitler as well, would educate the German people to say what the problem was. I mean, we all know today about the problem with the bankers and the Jewish structure of usury, etc. But a lot of people still today don't know a lot about it, and they'll actually wonder why all the fuss is about the Jews anyway, because they are ignorant to what throughout history and present as well. But he did educate his nation. So you get the feeling in World War II they knew exactly what they were fighting against, whereas many of the Allied soldiers, I felt, was told there's an ogre over in Europe who wants to conquer the world, a madman, and he needs taken down. And that was the sole driving force behind the average Allied soldier, which the documentary at the end shows, and a lot of people have written and regretted some of them actions.
Right. Yeah. I hope we can do this again, and maybe at that point we could also even tackle some of the questions that you ladies and gentlemen have listening as well, because there's always things you're going to forget and leave out and everything else. But
a huge subject in there, it really is.
It is, you know, and it deserves investigation, you know, for Christ's sake. Let's try to be honest about this and look at it for what it is, you know. And Let's just talk about one more item here, and it has to do with the chapter that you called, you know, we defeated the wrong enemy, or we defeated the wrong person, basically, and yeah. and this idea of what, let's just speculate a little bit, where do you think we would have been today, Dennis, in the world? How would it have been shaped? Would we all have, as we hear, we would all have been speaking German, we would all have been under a fierce fascist dictatorship where gays were hanged and Jews were murdered and everything else. So what type of world would we've had if Hitler won the war? Let's just speculate a bit.
Okay, well, there's certain things that you can well imagine anyway, because there were certain parts of Germany like what would have been transferred to the rest of Europe and maybe the rest of the world. But like I said earlier on, I do believe communism would have been defeated and wiped out. I also believe that Europe itself would have been an extension of what Germany had become, a thriving, bustling, industrial mega country in a short space of time. Certain things like homosexuality, as I said again earlier on, I said, I don't think Hitler is totally ignorant to the fact that there's always been homosexuality. And I don't think it would have been as open as today. I don't think we would have had the parades and the bearded women on television. I think it would have been, there would have been there, but pushed in the background. The same with, it was proved to me that he opened up the churches in the Ukraine. So I think you'd have been free to worship which religion you preferred. And certainly, I listed quite a few things in the documentary, which I can't rightly remember at the moment. But when you look at today and how things are taking shape and whatever, it begs to differ which would have been the better world.
Indeed. Very good. Now, this is indeed one of the greatest stories never told. It is an amazing story, folks, in terms of the impact alone. If we just look at the man and what he managed to accomplish, and whatever side of the fence you're on, it's an extraordinary event in history. And as any people who have read some good Greek tragedies knows, this is of course a point and a place in history which has shaped the world. And I'm not trying to say due to what happened and the way things turned out that it's been for the better, but it's part of our story, folks, and it's whether we like that or not, it is part of that Greek tragedy kind of tradition of great upheaval and great events in human history, and in my view it deserves the fair examination of it that it is, despite it being a tremendous slaughter on both sides of the fence here, but I want to thank you so much, Dennis, for coming on. And please let us know if there's anything additional, any additional points, maybe questions you usually get, or something that's really fundamental to the story that you feel we kind of left out that you want to give us before you, give us the website and tell us about the documentary again.
Okay, well, the website is thegreatestorynevertold.tv. They've also got a T-shirt thing going of their own. They've sorted some things out for Nipster. It's nipster.org, I think, where you can buy these T-shirts. But if I could just say, once you understand what went on back then during World War II and its final outcome, once you understand that, it makes today so much easier to understand as well. And for people who tend to believe certain people on the internet are known as gatekeepers, who proclaim that it's the Nazis all at fault today and doing this and doing that, are being misguided. The Nazis were actually wiped out in 1945, are a spent force now as a political entity. Communism won the day, and all these things we're going through today, which anti-God in the music industry, all this occult Illuminati signs, and how the youth is being corrupted and the breakup of the family. Hitler would not have allowed any of these things to have happened. That's totally against his ideology. This is a socialist communist agenda. And once you understand the documentary and the outcome of World War II, you'll understand much, much more about today.
Well, good work, Dennis. Thank you for doing something that you know, no media outlet in the world have been doing. There's no other. I know there are the people who are coming from a perspective that are revisionists or whatnot. But I'm talking about the of all the media outlets that exists out there from all the different countries. As far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, anyway, there's no one that actually have looked at the other side of this, which is quite incredible when you think about it, really. But that shows also the immense danger of it and the immense suppression that has been going on. And it also tells you people who indeed won that war and what kind of propaganda machine we're living in today. And also realize then that if you dig the world as it exists today, if you enjoy everything you're seeing in the world, then you're right in line with those who won the war, you know.
yeah, that's true. Yeah, without a doubt. But I want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity anyway to talk about it, because as you said, we are banned on various levels, and but we believe the truth should be out there. But it's not like we're forcing it on anybody. It's free to view on the website. A lot of people want to own a DVD and will join the membership. But at the end of the day, we say to people, you watch and you decide.
You watch and you decide. We'll leave it right there. I agree. Keep up the good work, Dennis. Folks, have a look. TheGreatestStoryNeverTold.tv. I hope we can do it again in the future, Dennis.
Pleasure.
Well, there you go. Was that horrible? Or was that interesting? Well, I hope you found the discussion engaging and thought-provoking. And I want to thank you so much for being a member, for thinking, for questioning, for daring to consider, and for helping us to continue to ask questions about history, propaganda, and so much more. Upcoming, we have Jessica Andreasson, Josh Reeves, Björn Nordström, Daniel Updike, Gordon Kennedy, Kai Murrows, and of course our second program with John Lash. We'll continue to break into new territory as we charge forward. Thank you for listening today. We'll talk to you later.